Take your golf expertise to the next level with Links Premier, unlocking the most exciting and insightful coverage of the game's courses, travel, communities, architecture, and more. With Links Premier, our latest subscription tiers offer something for everyone. Whether you enjoy reading the print edition of Links, clicking through our digital magazine, scrolling around linksmagazine.com, or all of the above. Plus, subscribers receive priority notifications for exclusive Links events, a welcome discount code to the Links online shop, and much more. Get your all-access pass today by visiting linksmagazine.com and clicking the subscribe link. Welcome to a special episode of the Links Golf Podcast. I'm digital editor Al Lunsford. I'm joined by my co-host Joe Passoff. I don't know how to say this. I can't believe I'm saying this. I played Augusta National on Monday. I can't even get it out of my mouth because it's so hard to believe.
That's what that experience is all about. You can't even form words properly to tell everybody you played Augusta National.
I still don't believe it. It's the whole day felt like a dream, as much as any experience that I've had in terms of feeling like an out of body thing. I mean, I wrote a piece about going down to the Bears Club and meeting Jack Nicklaus. As much as that is an out of body experience, that I kind of pales in comparison now to what I was able to do on Monday. Very lucky, very blessed feeling. But I, as many people know, they have a media lottery at the Masters every year. You submit a ticket earlier in the week if you're a credentialed media, and you have a chance. You have a chance to play Augusta on Monday. They do the drawing on Friday around lunchtime, and there were, I believe it was 28 people selected from the media. There, I think we had groups every 10 minutes starting at 10:50 going to 11:50. That was the media window. There were other people were playing out there as well, but in terms of media, that was our times. My name is on the first page, and you know, everything since then has been kind of a blur and in a total dream scenario for me. Obviously, anyone growing up watching the Masters, knowing about Augusta National, thinking there's no way I'll ever be able to. I used to think there, like, I may not ever get to a Masters. And that was kind of the bar. And in no world could I ever have imagined playing Augusta National, but extremely, extremely lucky to do so. And I want to share a little bit of my experience, what I learned, the roller coaster of emotions, and even talk about my round out there. I've had a lot of people curious to know my impressions and how I did, what was my score, what did I do on X hole. So hopefully that this podcast accomplishes that much. But yeah, feeling extremely grateful right now, Joe.
Al, you know, not everybody realizes that it is a genuine lottery, okay? Because I do know media members that put in 10 times, 12 times, 17 times, and did not get picked. So meaning they were significant enough media presence to be credentialed for 17 Masters and did not get picked to play in the media lottery. So I know of one in particular that I believe in year 18, he finally got picked. How many years had you put in, to the best of your knowledge?
This was 3 for me.
Okay.
Third year covering the Masters.
It happened, relatively early before you had a chance to have that despair build in, that inevitable letdown that some media members experience. So that's not bad. That's a nice little number there. So Al, when and how did you find out when, wow, you have been successful in the lottery to play Augusta National on Monday?
I found out on Friday afternoon. So they closed the media lottery picks at 9 a.m. on Friday. So no entries beyond 9 a.m. And then about lunchtime, they announced. So I was in from the course having lunch, and all of a sudden it's over the speaker you know, the winners of the media lottery have been announced. And at that point, it's everyone just kind of gets up and runs downstairs to see who has and who hasn't gotten in. There's some people who have gotten it in the past couple of years and just wanted to see who they know that might get the chance to play as well. But a lot of people are interested to know if they got it for the first time. There is some sort of rule stipulation, I guess, once you get it, there's a certain number of years before you're able to apply again. Not exactly sure what that number is. That will be a question of mine next year to know if I ever get the chance to do this again, but kind of thinking this is a once in a lifetime type of deal. But yeah, my name was on the first page of people who had won. And at that point, I kind of just, you know, I had my hand at my mouth and I'm biting my finger and just like, cannot believe that that's right there. I have to see it roll through a couple of times to make sure I'm looking at it right. But at that point, yeah, it's a real thing that's going to happen.
So now you've got 2.5 days of Masters competition that has to take place. There's a golf tournament going on. But what were your feelings over the next 2.5 days about the fact that you were going to get to play on Monday?
Yeah. Do I need to go to a driving range and start practicing immediately to make sure that I go out there and know what I'm doing? Do I want to go watch golf? It kind of made everything going on in the tournament fade into the background a little bit. And yeah, lost a little focus on the task at hand of being at the Masters. Also, you know, Scottie Scheffler ends up running away with it. So that kind of dims the competition aspect for me a little bit too. And maybe narrows my focus on actually going to play on Monday. But still, just the one thing that I did do was anytime I got in the car, I think the only time I've ever driven safer on the road was on the way home with a newborn baby twice, two sons. So you cannot imagine a person going exactly the speed limit with two hands white knuckling the wheel much more than I was for 2.5 days.
So Al, Monday arrives. What time did you arrive at Augusta National? And talk about the experience.
You are allowed to be on the grounds at maximum 1 hour before your tee time. So we attended a meeting on Sunday at the Masters in the press interview room. All of the people who were lucky enough to win had to go to a meeting and kind of get the rundown. Here's what to expect. Here's what rules we need to follow, how the day will go, and what you do. So at that point, we were given our tee times. I knew that I was teeing off at 11 a.m. sharp and given a card that had my tee time and my arrival time. So my arrival time would be 10 a.m. What I did was, knowing that information, I was outside of the gates of Augusta National in a parking lot. I think it was like the Fresh Market parking lot, about two turns away from the gate at Augusta, just watching the clock count down the minutes. So at 9:59, I pulled out of that parking lot to pull in onto Magnolia Lane, which that sounds ridiculous even saying that too. We got to come in the main gate and drive down Magnolia Lane to the clubhouse at Augusta, hand off our card, drop off our clubs.
Yeah. Typically with media and media parking, you cannot use Magnolia Lane. So that's the only time that you are permitted to drive down Magnolia Lane is if you've won the media lottery or going to play golf.
And I went, I don't know what the minimum for your car is to go. I think I was leaning on the brakes. I was going like 2 miles an hour down Magnolia Lane, just absolutely taking it all in. So yeah, you're right. The press parking lot is a bit down the road, down, I guess that would be Washington Road, adjacent to Augusta. You enter in a totally separate place. So you can see down Magnolia as you're driving by, but You can't sniff it unless you have an opportunity like this.
So on the grounds, you arrive barreling along at 2 miles an hour. And how did you spend the hour between arriving on the grounds and your opening tee shot?
So from Magnolia Lane, you pull in, valet kindly takes your golf clubs and your car for you and walk in. We were using the champions locker room and our foursome was assigned a locker. So Sandy Lyle's locker in the champions locker room was ours. And quickly changed shoes. They had some grab and go breakfast options. But at that point you want to head to the range, and practice area to get a feel because you've only got an hour to figure it out. You use the same range the pros use during the Masters, same putting green and chipping area, short game area as the pros. Great. Cool thing about the range, they have a long view where it's exactly the view that you're looking at on the first tee of the first hole on the driving range. So the same bunkers at the same distance for the pros, of course. We were playing the member tees out there. And I think, got the scorecard right here. It's about 1,300 yards shorter, the Masters tees to the member tees. So, but look and feel of that first shot on the first hole is right there for you. So you can practice that and have that in your mind as you get ready to play the round. Then you get shuttled over and we're on the first tee and they take a picture of us. That was a very, great, nice thing that Augusta did for us was took our picture on the first tee. And at the end of the round, they actually handed us a framed photo from our first tee picture. That was an incredibly nice touch. Of course, no cell phones, just like the Masters tournament, no cell phones out there on the grounds. But we could bring cameras. So I had a digital camera with me. I bought a disposable camera as well, just to snap some pics that way too, and carried that around with me all day to soak all that in and have those visual memories to look back on for myself personally.
Yeah, that's a tough one in the photography aspect because things were a little more restrictive even, back in my heyday. Because the question is, and this comes up a lot, whether it's Augusta National or somewhere else, is how much do you just want to soak in what you're doing and not worry about taking pictures and documenting it? Now, today's generation, social media, it is like, you don't even think about it. It's mm-hmm. always snapping, filming, sending, and everything else. But Augusta is that kind of contemplative, just soak it in sort of thing. So how did you balance what to shoot, when to use the camera, and actually playing?
Yeah. It's a great question. And like I said, you can't have your phone. So it's not like you just pull that out of your pocket whenever. Going into it, one of the big things is, you can't post any of this on social media either. So it's not like you're doing it to share with the masses. It's kind of, your own personal thing to take back with you. So kind of a mix. I actually had a really great caddy who was like, I've done this for people over and over again. He took control of my camera at different points in the round and actually was just taking pictures for me. So his name was Keith. Shout out to Keith. He was a great, great caddy at Augusta. He took some amazing pictures, either of me playing or of the surrounds, that turned out really wonderful. But I knew I wanted to, it was kind of like a feel thing out there. Having seen the course now several times, going to three Masters, knowing what's out there, there were definitely some spots that I wanted to take pictures of. You get to Amen Corner, you obviously want to bring your camera out for that. But, the look down to fairway, to the green down there, or across the water on 16, you know, there are certainly spots where I went to the tee or went to a certain spot knowing I was going to take a picture. But otherwise it was just like, if it struck me that there was something just really beautiful or cool, a course feature, that I'm getting this perspective of actually walking down the fairway and seeing something that way, maybe I'll bring the camera out. But I tried to, like you said, I tried to soak it all in as much as I could.
Well,
would I change a thing? I don't know if I would or not, but I don't think I'm going to get a chance to.
All right, Al, you know, you're a pretty good student. You can tell folks what you play to. What number is your handicap index?
Handicap right now is about a 5.
Okay. Yeah. So two questions, and then I want to hear about the round. How were your nerves approaching the first tee, playing the first hole? And even before you teed off, what were your expectations about what you were going to try to get from the round?
Yeah, it's funny. The first time someone asked me in the press center, once I had found out that I was going to be playing, it's like, all right, what's your number? Knowing what my handicap is, a couple of guys there, you know, like, what are you feeling? Like, are you trying to break 80? Like, what's your number out there? And it's like, gosh, I mean, I don't even know if I could fathom expecting to break 80 on Augusta National. The first time I said, yeah, I'd be thrilled with 85. And the next time someone asked me that question, I was like, you know what? I'd be thrilled to break 90. The third time someone asked me that question, it's like, if I break 100, like, oh, it's going to be a great day. So the expectations were kind of low. I think I've been playing pretty decent golf recently, the last few times I've been out and played. But how do you even begin to prepare for that feeling of being on the first tee at Augusta? I was nervous. Yeah, definitely. But I've been more nervous before, oddly, you know,
in a golf setting.
Yeah. Once I got over the ball, you know, cause it's not competition. You're not with your buddies and knowing that they're going to rib you if you hit one bad off the first or anything like that. You're at Augusta National, obviously. So the nerves of that is just like, I do want to play well. Absolutely. If I don't, I'm still playing Augusta. Like, it's, you kind of wrestle with that in your mind. And of course I'm thinking like, yeah, I'm just going to enjoy it. I'm not going to care how I play. But anyone who says that, you know, once you get out there and you string together some holes, good or bad, you're going to feel some type of way about that. So, yeah, I wanted to play good. Don't know if I expected to, but I think it was important for me to not throw the round away, like just completely have no feel at all and not be able to really appreciate it because I'm thinking about how bad I'm playing. I wanted to play decently well.
All right. First tee, shaking or not shaking as you're putting the tee in the ground?
Not shaking. Proudly, not shaking.
All right, Al, tell us about the round.
Well, before I get right into that, and the one thing I will say that, you know, is spinning through my head as I'm approaching the first tee, at the Masters every year, there's I think it's the best golf reading of the year. Joe, I don't know if you would agree with that, just because so many of the game's best writers are waxing poetic about Augusta and the Masters and its history and lore. And you just read some of the best golf content you'll read all year during that single week. But someone else who played the same day as me that's already chronicled their experience that I thought was really, really well done. And I just wanted to acknowledge a guy named Brendan Porath. I don't know if you know that name. I read what he wrote on the Fried Egg about going into the day and what it was like. And I can absolutely relate and sympathize with what he was talking about. How many people reached out to him and we're so excited for him and the opportunity. He said he was kind of overwhelmed by it. I felt the same. Once I word started to circulate from Friday going into Monday that Al Lunsford had gotten picked and was going to be playing Augusta National, there were so many people that reached out to me, people I hadn't heard from, obviously family, super excited, close friends. It made me think about growing up. There was one friend of mine that had gotten the chance to play Augusta National, and it was like he was a legend for that, because you don't think that you're going to even know anyone that's of that stature and of whatever it takes to play Augusta. You just really don't know that many people who have done it. So, you know, whether it was my dad, I mean, like, I'll be with you the whole way. He said at 11 o'clock his time, he was going to, I think he was at the beach or on the way home, maybe home by then already, but he was going to wherever he was going to stand and say, "Now on the tee from Burlington, North Carolina, Al," in the middle of the grocery store or whatever, just to share that moment with me. In a way, it made that walking up to that tee shot emotional for sure. And knowing that there were a lot of people that were just so excited for you and that opportunity felt really great and really special. Obviously, just feel like the most lucky, one of the 28 or whatever luckiest people in the world to get this opportunity. So, Joe, before I move on, I know you got this chance too in 1993. You said you won the Masters lottery. Did you have that type of feeling from, you know, others just being thrilled for the opportunity ahead of you that day?
Oh, more jealousy.
I'm sure there's a ton of that as well. But yeah.
Yeah, that as I said, that was the very first time I put in, and it was only my second Masters. And we were with a photographer in the magazine I was with, who raced ahead of me, you know, to put his name in the lottery. And it was just the two of us. And then they picked me. And if he had just been patient and let me continue ahead of him, it would have been him. But yeah, the emotions about it all. And I was pretty young, pretty new in the business. So I was just starting kind of a life in golf and traveling to really good places. But, you know, having said that and understanding 30 years later that there is no more difficult or fabled golf course to get onto than Augusta National, you know, whether it's Cypress Point or somebody's private course. I mean, Augusta National is the holy grail of gets, especially when you think about all of the history that has unfolded there in front in all of those Masters. You know, if you are a golf fan, if it's generational with family, with friends, you know, you have all celebrated this occasion of the Masters, and to go play the golf course that has housed all these famous footsteps year after year, you love sitting there and a ritual in your life, and actually saying, "I'm going to play here," and play it. I mean, I used to say, you know, got me free drinks, you know, for the rest of my life to be able to say in any bar golf conversation, "Yes, I played Augusta National." So yeah, it was that special.
It's kind of hard to explain. I think I've struggled to find words for what it all meant and the whole experience of it all. It's, you know, it instantly the greatest day of golf of my life. So I'll go through, you know, maybe if you're curious about what I shot and what I did on each hole, you can listen to the next 5 minutes of this as I go through my round hole by hole. If you're not, feel free to skip ahead. Tell me to buzz off and move on with your day. But I've gotten the most popular question, obviously, from people is, what'd you shoot? Other people who are very interested and know the Masters well have asked, what'd you do on such and such hole? How'd you fare on Amen Corner? Things like that. So, and then all the way down to like what holes were more difficult than you thought they might be, or easier. And then, you know, what surprised you? So hopefully I can cover a little bit of that. here.
Take your golf expertise to the next level with Lynx Premier, unlocking the most exciting and insightful coverage of the game's courses, travel, communities, architecture, and more. With Lynx Premier, our latest subscription tiers offer something for everyone. Whether you enjoy reading the print edition of Lynx, clicking through our digital magazine, scrolling around lynxmagazine.com, or all of the above. Plus, subscribers receive priority notifications for exclusive Lynx events, a welcome discount code to the Lynx online shop, and much more. Get your all-access pass today by visiting lynxmagazine.com and clicking the subscribe link.
Joe, happy to say I shot 83 at Augusta National from the member tees, and that broke my initial 85 mark that I had set for myself, so felt amazing about that number, for sure.
Congrats. you rat fink, you beat me by a shot.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
Wow, that's a very nice number.
Didn't expect
very
that.
Very nice.
Thank you very much. Yeah, also, you know, buzz off, whatever. No one cares, yada, yada. But that's what I shot. Member tees, scorecard says 6,365 yards from the member tees at Augusta. So here we go. Going off the first hole. First tee, I am left off the tee. I'm in the pine straw. I've now got about 200 yards around. You have to hit kind of a low hook to get anywhere close. So 4-iron punch into the front left bunker, that first green. Advanced onto the green from there, and two putts for your routine bogey to start off. Yeah, bogey's a popular score at the first hole, even for the pros. I think that's a really tough opening hole. And, you know, I didn't challenge the green with my second shot, but I can imagine that approach shot being very intimidating. If you're in the proper spot and you have a good chance to be on the green.
Well, what I love already, Al, is that you played one hole and the first grass that you found after the tee box was on the green.
Was the green. Yeah. I mean, I was like, I guess it was pine straw to bunker to green. Yeah. So the first grass I touched, your ball's on the tee box. So did not touch grass at Augusta until the green, but yeah, was happy to get that bunker shot on the green and make bogey at worst. So we're feeling okay so far. Two, the tee has moved up significantly, especially where it is now, the Masters, you know, way far back behind that grandstand on one. Now that the tee box is almost to, I think there's a road back behind there. And it's almost to the fence of that road. So far back there. Card says 585 for the Masters, 515 for the members. So moved up significantly. I was able to clear the two bunkers on the right off the tee, which was a thrilling tee shot for me. So didn't hit it left. Kept it straight and gave myself about 240. Into that hole on a downslope. You realize when you go to the Masters, the significance of the elevation out there. Everyone always talks about you don't know from just looking on TV until you get there how severe it is. And, you know, same deal for actually playing as well. So at that point, it's not about trying to go for the green for me. It's, as my caddy said, it's about positioning. You want to be. Oh, I also neglected to mention we played all the Sunday pins because this was the day after the final round of the Masters. So everything isn't the same as Sunday. So that pin's tucked back right. So you don't want to be right where you have a pitch shot over the right greenside bunker. It's very delicate and hard to get that close. You'd rather be on the left. So I laid up with a hybrid and lo and behold, I'm kind of on the right side. So got to make a shot there. My 60 degree barely clears the lip of that bunker and have a good look at birdie that I miss and make par. First par of the day at 2, just one of my favorite holes out there. Felt great to get my first par, Joe. Number 3, short par 4, 340 for the members. Not a ton of difference from the pros there. They played at 350. So hit driver in the center. I've got a standard 100 yard shot. You don't want to chase that flag on the left, front left of that green because you can't hold it. And so my plan was not to and hit it at the center of the green and kind of tugged it. So I ended up chasing that flag anyways, lands on, spins off down the hill 30 yards. So at that point, delicate chip coming back up, chipped it over the green. Now put a putter in my hand for par off the back of the green. End up getting up and in there for bogey. So that felt like a really good bogey save. What felt like a great opportunity to get a par on a really tough hole off the drive quickly met some challenge and got, as they say, got Augusta there on three. So had to confront that early, but made bogey, feeling good. Four, best shot of the day, clearly for me. Par three, playing, it was a 170 on this, this is what this says on the scorecard. That was calling for like a 190 shot. So I hit a five iron. Again, best feeling shot of the day to like 10 feet back center pin there and missed the birdie putt coming back. So par on four. Five moved up a ton, 400 yards versus 495 for the Masters competitors. So I was actually able to clear those bunkers on the left on five, which, you know, you never see many people do that in the Masters. Those are in a really tough spot for the pros. But I was able to get over them, get on the green with an eight iron to about 25 feet, two putt, par. So we're cruising. We've got three pars, two bogeys through five holes. Six, downhill par three, got a seven iron in my hand. Pin is back right. I hit it back left. So that area of the green on six is just like, basically like, got like 7 feet around that pin, a circle. If you don't hit it there, you're down a slope somewhere. So I've hit a long, probably like a 40-foot putt. Caddy's like, you know, go ahead and hit it. It's up the hill. It's kind of into the grain. Go ahead and hit it. And I struggled with that all day. The greens are obviously just lightning quick from the tournament the day before. So anytime I had an uphill putt of a significant length, I always left that short. Because I just was afraid to hit that shot too hard. So that was my first three putt on six. Tough go. Seven, tight par four, postage stamp green. Joe, as you know, they moved that green back and put bunkers all around it, what it used to be. My drive was a little right, kind of under a tree, and I tried to get it up to that green, but hit a limb on the way there. So I'm short of those bunkers, facing my third shot. Club chip. And it rolls back down one of the fingers of turf between those bunkers. So I'm chipping up for four and then miss a like 6-footer for bogey. So that's my first double of the day, came at number seven. Number eight, driver is par five, left fairway for me. Pretty short hole there too, 480 versus 570 on the card. So I've only got about 200 into the green there. And hit a four iron up, you know, up the hill. It's blind. You kind of have to play around the curve there at the top of that hill, just short of the green. Hit a not as good of a bump and run as I could have. Didn't get it all the way back to the hole. And our second three putt happens at eight. So bogey there, really, really could have been a par or better. Very unfortunate. Number nine, one of my best drives of the day on nine. Right down the middle, get just past the walkway, almost where Scottie Scheffler was on Sunday of the final round at the Masters. Hit it back. You know, that green is a steep false front. Anything short of that flag is going to come back 80 yards down the hill. So played it intentionally a little bit longer and raced a birdie putt by the hole, settled with a par there. So 42 on the front nine. Felt okay about that for sure. Let me take a pause. Any observations from you on my front nine, Joe?
Well, what green scared you / surprised you the most with all that was going on?
I would say two green is a lot different than even standing there as a patron versus standing on it. It is the place you have to hit the approach shot on the right. If you're just going to go right over that bunker, you have, you know, like a 5x5 circle you need to hit it into to even get that close. But it's so slick. Any putt on that green scared me for sure. I kind of felt the same way about three. Three was a really, really difficult green. And they always talk about that hole playing a lot harder than it looks. I mean, it's just a short par four, 350 yards, but that green was terrifying to me.
Yeah, some say all 18 have some terror in them, but yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah,
three's a doozy. Five to me is always among the more vexing putting surfaces. And yeah, when you get to nine and you see that in that little tiny circle that Scheffler hit with the backstop, but if you're short of the hole, it's rolling off the green. If you're well above the hole, you got about a 30 to 50 foot straight downhill putt. I mean, that's terror inducing as well.
Yeah, that just shows you how remarkable of a shot that Scheffler hit there on nine. And just, you know, overall, I think the biggest thing that I've learned, that I learned from that round and even nine holes in, how exacting that course is around the green. Off the tee, maybe a little forgiving. It's definitely, you know, a huge strategic puzzle in terms of you have to be in the right spot to approach the green from off the tee. Maybe a little bit more forgiving, but anywhere around the green it totally demands precision to execute, to score well. And to see what Scheffler was able to do out there is crazy. I mean, the guy is on another level right now.
And speaking of other levels, we're about to head to the second nine at Augusta National with Al Lunsford.
All right. So make the turn 10, my favorite hole in the property. And apologies, this is running longer than I thought it would. Just want to get my thoughts out here. Jotted this all down. Love 10. Joe, as you know, the last original McKenzie bunker there. From the pros tees, you can't see down there, which is always a really cool visual for me. A little disappointed that I could see it from my tee box moved up a bit. That whole place 450 for the members, and you have that bunker in sight, but you still have to wrap it around that corner, which I did. It hit probably my best drive of the day right there, down to 165 out. That second shot, feel good about the shot in the air. It starts tailing a little bit left and lands long and trampolines off the back of the green, long and left in the pine straw. So recovery shot from there, just trying to get something on the surface, but I'm up against like the collar of the pine straw and the grass there. So left that short. Next chip, I thought I hit perfect, and it just rolls and rolls and keeps rolling off the front of the green, 20 yards down the hill. So I am chipping up at that point for my fifth shot. And just kind of chuckling to myself because of how funny that last one was, where I just thought like, yeah, nipped that perfectly and left it short of the hole, just released out, and it just kept going all the way down the hill. Somehow got that next chip up to about 8 feet and made the putt for six. So another double, but, you know, could have been worse. Absolutely felt like I could have had a really big number on that hole after being in great position off the tee. You know, all of a sudden here I am having to make a long putt for double. So, feels like that happens a lot to the competitors too, in the Masters, just things kind of compound on themselves. And all of a sudden they're putting for bogey or double out of nowhere. It can happen to the pros. It can happen to me too. 11. So here we go. We're going to name in corner. Drive goes a little bit right. At this point, every time I hit a driver the rest of the day, it was right. I just had a case of the rights the rest of the way in. So it started at 11, but luckily I got a nice bounce off the patron path. That's what my caddy told me, where it'd been really, really padded down from the patrons walking all day. So that kind of caromed down to those group of small trees on the right-hand side of 11 and actually just have a clear 150-yard shot to the green from there. So pretty fortunate off the tee. I am thinking on that next shot anywhere but left in that pond. So obviously my shot comes to rest on the right side, short. I was not going to allow myself to lose a ball there. So I'm putting from off the green and get that in two shots. So we parred the first leg of Amen Corner to 12. The most famous hole in the world. Is that fair to say? Certainly in the conversation.
It's in the conversation.
Yeah. So I'm feeling that there. And this is taking a long time to play this hole because, you know, every group who goes to that place is going to take photos and they're on the Ben Hogan Bridge and taking pictures and savoring it as long as they like. So we have a little wait on the tee to soak it all in. It's playing about 150. And for anyone who knows where the Sunday pin is, who doesn't know where the Sunday pin is, it's all the way on the right hand side of that small hourglass green. It's kind of a no-go there. Like, you'd be crazy to try to hit your shot straight at that flag. So the play is middle of the green or left in the fat part of that green. I went last in the group and saw all three of my playing partners ahead of me hit it long in the bunker. All three of them. And, you know, you start to second guess, you know, what's the wind doing? You play the Tiger Woods video game and know the wind is just spinning in a circle right there at that part. So you really just don't know that this could be the right club. And then 10 seconds later, it could be the wrong club. So hit my shot a little bit fat, thinking, oh no, I'm going to be short in Race Creek. And it lands perfectly in that left hollow of the green, right in the middle. So I'm on the green there and somehow make that 50 feet to the hole in two. So two putt for par. Par on Golden Bell, Joe. Let's go. I'm feeling so good about that. 13. Of course, now I'm thinking, all right, I have to par at worst. I have to get through Amen Corner, even par. So 13 moved up a ton from where they're at. The card says 455 versus 545. So 90 yards in front of where the pros are hitting back there. Doesn't stop me from hitting the dreaded straight ball there, which means it goes right into the woods where all the patrons hang out and watch shots and watch players try to make the decision to go for it.
I have watched golf at the Masters with you on that very spot.
Yeah, we love that spot, Joe. That's where I was.
Just not playing from it.
The pros don't seem to hit it all the way where the fans are, but somehow I did. So I'm thick. I'm in there and have to do something really good to get out of there. So 4-iron punch again. I'd already done that once in the day. Tried it again. And that another one of probably my best shots of the day. I hit that 4-iron at least 150 low screamer through the trees, completely clean, and leave myself another 150 into that green. So pin is back right, down at the bottom of the way the green that slopes there. I hit it top left. So I'm on the top facing a really quick downhill putt to that hole. Heart starts thumping there and have about 7 feet remaining after my lag putt there. Drill that putt for par. Let's go. Par on Amen Corner. That is the highlight of my life, Joe.
That's a highlight to brag about. But man, Al, you're pouring in 8-footers. You're putting from 50 feet to pouring in 7-footers. I mean, this is a big deal at Augusta, where even 3-footers and 4-footers can be pretty tough.
Yeah, that as much as like I came away from it, and by the end of this, you'll you'll realize I had no birdies on the day. So I felt like there were some putts that I could have made that I didn't make, but when I was making those like short ish ones, you know, a little longer than gimme range, you know, I'm thinking like those are good putts, but the more I think about it, like, man, those are great putts to get those to fall.
You bet.
Oh, thank you. But thank you for that positivity.
Yeah. 11, 12, 13, par.
Par. 14, drive. You know what that means? Right. So we're in the woods on 14 as well. I have about 130 in and not much of a play there. I have to go under some trees again. So take a 7-iron and punch it up, and incredible result there. Rolls it up. That green is severely tiered. That may be the most intimidating green on the entire golf course to me, 14.
Yeah.
So got it up to the top tier and close to where the pin was. Ended up like 25 feet there as well from the woods. So ecstatic about that result. And two putt per par there. So string of pars continues, 4 straight pars. 15, driver in hand. We're going right again. So we are kind of, you know, the woods are a little thinner there. So you can get a shot away there too. Lay up to that popular spot on the left side of the fairway, just in front of the Sarazen Bridge. Have about a 75-yard shot over the water there on the famous par 5, 15th. Clip it really good to, you know, about 30 feet low of the hole. And 2-putt for par again. So we are absolutely rolling right now. 5 straight pars. 16. Moved up a bit on that tee box, basically from the back to the front. There's just one long tee box there. And it's about a 150 shot again. So I've done this several times today already. Feel like I have the right club for it. And again, leave it a little out to the right of my target line, hangs up on the top right of that green. So the pin where everyone knows it is on 16 is low and left. I've got a really fun putt ahead of me there, which, you know, honestly, he gave me the spot. I didn't think I could have hit it much better than I did. Rolls down to about 4 feet for par. So feeling awesome about that. And I think it was the one time the whole day, bonehead move. Caddy says, this is going to be left edge. And I get it over and I was like, I feel like it could stay, you know, pretty straight here. And he's telling me left edge. So I didn't listen to him. I kind of pushed the putt anyways too, and I missed it. So my string of pars ends there at 16. Tap in for 4. Caddy's like, I told you left edge, right? It's like, yeah, you did.
Yeah, he's going to let you know.
You did. So not feeling great about that one. Why would you ever not listen to your caddy at Augusta National? I digress. Okay, 17. We're coming down the stretch here. Driver's right again. Okay, back up the hill. Yeah, 17, actually, Joe's. 14 and 17, I thought, were the two most intimidating greens on the whole course. And, you know, I'm at a position on the right. Pin is tucked on the right side behind a big greenside bunker in front of the green. So my play is left. I hit it over the green. Chip that next one back over the other side. So I'm chipping up for par. Man, I couldn't have chipped the next one better and tapped in for bogey. So I'm escaping a lot of these holes where I'm just going back and forth over the green, tight lied chips that I'm not really executing. But I get one back and save bogey there. So going to the last hole, 18, moved up from 465 way back in that chute to 385. So a little more comfy drive, but pure intimidation nonetheless with those bunkers on the left right in front of you. thinking you can play a little cut maybe and hit a decent shot. As you know, I've been playing the right drive for a while now. So I kind of am thinking, well, maybe let's allow for that. And that just overemphasized the shot and ballooned fade into the woods on 18 off the tee. Got to hit something low. No real chance of getting up to the green there. There's a big oak in the way on the right that I'd never quite seen before walking that course. But from that perspective, I realized, you know, it's not just as easy as a punch up and roll up to the green. There are other trees in the way there too. So I end up hitting it low. It runs up left of the green, up on where the patron walkway is left of the green. So I keep the hybrid in my hand and kind of punch one, roll one up to that green, use the slope of the bunker on the right of that green to bring it back a little bit, and face a putt that a lot of people face to win the Masters, that just 15 footer right of the pin that's front left on Sunday. And unfortunately just missed it. Scared the hole, but we're not in. So we tap in for our bogey, 41 on the back. So I improved on the back by one, 83 for the day. I'll take it. 83 at Augusta National. I will take that.
As well you should. That's a terrific round. I mean, it sounded like you kept things in control. Even with the rights off the tee near the end, sometimes you're just a natural deflation because all the emotion that went into the round, you just have a natural letdown. You know, by the same token, didn't cost you too much. Your punch outs were good and, you know, most of your recoveries were good. So, you know, to be able to throw a number at folks and say, you know, that's a nice number, whether it's breaking 90, breaking 80. I mean, it just sounds good. I played Augusta National and 83 is very respectable. I mean, there's a guy who's won a few Masters who shot an 82 just a couple days before that. So, yeah, you're in the ballpark.
Well, that frame of reference, and anyone who's asked me what I shot, I was like, well, Tiger shot his career worst round at the Masters this week and shot 82, and he still beat me by one. So that's how I played.
And that was your career worst at Augusta National.
Career worst. For me, and career best.
And career best, yeah.
And probably career only score. If I was a betting man, then I would say 83 times is as many times as I'll ever hit it on Augusta National.
Yeah, I mean, enough of the memories of big putts, of big saves, of really good shots hit. You know, hey, would you trade a few of the pars for a birdie or two? Yeah, maybe. But overall, just to have been in every hole and had a chance, and being able to savor those memories hole by hole where you can replay the round and have pictures to prove it. Yeah, that's pretty much as good as it gets.
Yeah, I realize how lucky I am. You know, it's great to talk about it and, you know, maybe I don't want it to sound like I'm bragging or anything. And just, I have to talk about it because I got to play the round that everyone hopes that they play one day, but no one thinks they will. And just because of how rare that is. So, this has been a great fun little exercise to talk about, the day. But Joe, you know, I'd be remiss not to ask you about your day and what you really remember from that round. I asked you the emotions going into it, but you know, how fresh is it even today, 2024, so 31 years later, your round at Augusta?
You know, Al, I have been fortunate to play most of the great golf courses on earth, and that round at Augusta, I've just played it once, and it remains clearer than most. a little Gary Cope from the other network. You know, maybe the most of all, you know, some of the differences were my group had to start on 10, which is a little bit different. I don't know if any of the groups playing in the media day started on 10.
I think we all went off one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe they fixed that over the years. That are, you know, it does take away a tiny bit from not being able to play the course in order. But then, okay, that was the way the course opened in 1934. So I'll take that. I was so nervous that in the hopes of getting the ball airborne, because this is back in the Woods days and blade irons and so forth, for, you know, my 12 handicap then, I hit a 5-wood off 10-tee. Not the choice for everyone, but I was hopeful of just getting it airborne, which I did. But then duffed one, and I'm proud to say, into that giant McKenzie bunker, which no self-respecting pro, you know, was in for 60 years before that sort of thing. So, I eventually got over the nerves somewhat, played an amazing 12th hole, a tee shot that I pushed a little bit, but hit well, and it grazed the edge of the cup on what would have been a hole in one. So it left me with a 6-foot downhill putt and I lipped out. So Hit the edge on the tee shot, lipped out on the putt, but made par. And then had par at 13, par at 15. My only 3-putt. And this is funny, as I was listening to your adventure on 16, my only 3-putt came at 16. And that's because I left my ball on the right side and I had to scare in a shaky 4-footer to avoid a 4-putt. So I had a caddy named Benny who had been caddying there since 1962 and was Lanny Watkins' regular caddy when the players had to use Augusta caddies up through 1983. So I had a great caddy and he had all the reads and all the calming influences and so forth. And that made it a little extra special. It's starting on the back. And then, you know, by the time we finished up the front nine and I went 43-41, but I think that may be reversed depending on the nines. I figured out that if you could handle shots off downhill tight lies, okay, which we didn't see an awful lot of back in that time period, Augusta's grass were just shorter, you know, for the competitions and the severe downhill lies. If you could figure that shot out, it was the easiest of the top 100 courses, you know, provided you weren't, you know, spastic with a putter and had a good caddy helping you with the reads and just controlling the pace a little bit. And that's what I had. You know, I got lucky in that regard and actually played to my handicap. So the only other highlights from there was, you know, a guy that couldn't handle the pace of the greens. He had a 12 handicap and he shot 101. Because he just couldn't get the ball in the hole. And then we played with a young lady and she and I shared the caddy. She hadn't played much golf in her life, but she put in for the media lottery. I know her name and her outlet, but 31 years later, it shall remain with me. And she shot 151.
Ooh.
With a par 3 on the 16th hole. She beat me.
She beat me
on 16. And then I remember just a classic. She had about a 40-foot downhill putt on 5, one of the toughest greens on the course. She's over the putt, and then she stops and looks up and says to the caddy, to Benny, "Should I hit this pretty good?" And he says, "Not too good." So, like, this is a golf conversation, right? And, you know, whatever, she 3, 4, 5 putted. But as a group, we were very happy. The other group, and I've written about this, one of the other members of our foursome was a fellow from Germany. And because his plane was leaving, he had to leave after 10 holes. So, I mean, he got Amen Corner in, but he didn't get the rest of the front nine in. And I said, what could possibly be so important in Dusseldorf that you had to skip the rest of your round at Augusta National and then fly, you know, fly home. So we had a gorgeous day. It was the year that Chip Beck chose to lay up at 15 instead of going for it, and it didn't pay off for him, and Langer won, and all I was rooting for, I didn't care who won, just don't have it end in a tie and an extended playoff that would extend until Monday, and then they'd have to scrap the media play.
Right.
So I knew the weather forecast was pretty good. That was the only other thing that would be the problem. And and of course, I got to Augusta probably 45 minutes early, but I was so jacked up that I wanted, you know, into the members pro shop and then look around at the places I couldn't otherwise go, soak it all in. And by the time I got to the range, I only had time to hit 3 9-irons, and then it was my time to go. So to this day, that's the routine I've kept if I'm running late or we've got to move and tee off. Hit 3 9-irons and go. If I could do it at Augusta National, I can do it anywhere.
So, oh, yeah.
That's yeah, great. I've got very, very special memories from the day. Somewhere in all my belongings is something from a drugstore that has a wedding camera disposable with some pictures from that day. The club wasn't taking pictures, and there were no such things as cell phones in those days, mm-hmm. either. So not that you could use them this time, but the notion that for the rest of my days, whenever the topic came up, yes, I have played Augusta National. I made a par at 12, you know, a few other highlights, and shot a respectable number. So never really even came close, real close to returning to play it. But nobody asks you how many times have you played Augusta? It's, have you played Augusta? And you and I both can answer the question, yes, we have.
It's just crazy. Like, it makes no sense. But you're right. It's a big one. You check off your golf resume for sure. I mean, it's like the hole in one kind of up there with in terms of like accomplishments or things to do in golf. Have you had a hole in one? Have you played Augusta National? Those are like huge, huge questions. And to be able to say yes to either of those means a lot. Completely unfathomable. The guy in your group that left after 10 holes. I cannot believe that. I played with a guy, Casey Bannon from the Golfers Journal. What an exceptional golfer he is. He played in college. He said he shot 75. He had 3 birdies. Could have been better. Like he could have broken par easily, in my opinion. He just had some tough bounces that looked like he landed a shot in the right spot and just took a firm bounce somewhere and ended up in a spot that wasn't very advantageous. So, gosh, he played well. And then I played with 2 guys from, I think they were from the Golf Channel. They were from Argentina. So Golf Channel Argentina. And I've already WhatsApped them and connected with them. So, like, we're family now. The 4 of us that have played Augusta National together, we'll have that forever. So
there you go.
Can't wait to keep up with them. But yeah, got to go to the members pro shop and walk around. And then, you know, kind of at that point at the end of the day, it's, you know, hey, sir, thank you for coming. Can we get your car for you and have a great day? And then I don't know probably the last time I'll walk out of that Augusta National Clubhouse and drive out of Magnolia Lane and having just played the course and then I'm on my way over as quick as it started. And totally felt like a dream, still does. The most unreal feeling walking around on a golf course I've ever had. That you're playing golf, but you're just like, wow, that really just happened. And I'll never forget it. So wonderful. And wonderful to relive it with you, Joe.
Oh, it was a lot of fun for me. You know, again, my memories are pretty decent from all those years ago. And it's fun to relive them through you, Al, as somebody who enjoyed, you know, the moment as well as you did. So congrats on that.
All right. Well, hope anyone listening enjoyed this conversation, wasn't too perturbed by the whole thing or annoyed, but really special to share. Thanks again, Joe. I'll talk to you again soon.
Sounds good, Al.